Seeing if you can hear me right now.
I can hear you now, starting with the word seeing.
That's the beginning of the sentence.
Good. How are you, Douglas?
I'm doing fine. Good. See daylight in the background. That's a good sign.
Marcos.
I'll be leaving my video off just because that seems to allow for at least better processing of words to come through. So.
Okay. Should we wait a few minutes? Marco Mossi, you're muted.
Ah, yes, okay. It was meaningless anyway, what I said before.
Okay. beautiful when we get caught like that. Should we wait a few minutes or begin?
I'd say let's wait a minute or two.
Okay, however, I'm in there.
Katina, whom I don't think you've met, said that she would be joining us late. She put together a whole stack of notes on this chapter and was signed up to lead the discussion tonight, but wants to participate this morning as well.
Lovely.
Sometimes she doesn't show up. She has other things going on. So I can't promise that she will. But
Where is she geographically?
I think North Carolina or South Carolina, but I might be wrong about that. Doug, do you know?
Virginia? Were you asking Katina's location?
Oh yeah, Virginia. You're right.
Virginia.
Did you see her notes?
I printed them out and I left them in the house. So I wouldn't have time really to read them. I thought I'd look at them before our call tonight.
I tried, but I saw them a couple hours ago. It's 14 pages full letters. A lot of stuff. So interesting.
She has a particular style. She uses different color fonts for different kinds of points. She has her own perspectives in one color, and she has a summary in another color, and she kind of hierarchizes the information by order of importance. And she used to be a school teacher as well. So
that's why.
Similar skills.
Okay, now I understand it better. Yeah, well, she seems to be very passionate. It's great. It looks great. Yeah.
Did I see her name on the stewardship email thread?
That's correct, and she's on a couple of other threads as well.
Okay. Sometimes I do catch those threads. Most of the time, not. Yeah.
Well, it's hard even for me to keep up. So. Can expect anybody else to, not completely anyway. Which is, and it's nice because, in a way, like one topic can become a world unto itself, the whole a depth inquiry unto itself. I think we're used to from social media this notion of quantity and that there being a lot of things going on, and sometimes, a topic can get a lot of attention, but I think it's interesting when something becomes more depth, more singular and depth focused, and where it doesn't matter if there are a lot of things going on because the bit that is very significant to those who are interacting in that area. So it's interesting to see how things evolve because the forum has been going for 3 years now, and there's been a whole evolution of it, and it's still relatively small, but at the same time, it's kind of another order of it's an order of complexity beyond what it was, or a few orders probably, when we started, and it's interesting just to see how people from different backgrounds and, you know, through different pathways have become attracted, and how there's been this kind of intermingling or intermixture of communities or lineages or just interests. But that's another matter. We're here for Aurobindo. I was just filling up a little bit of time while we waited, and perhaps we've waited long enough.
So before we meditate, I'd like to talk a little bit about what I intend to do. And as always, it's a map. So anything that deviates from that is fine. I think we should all be following our highest reach of consciousness that is possible. So I've been thinking a lot lately about sacred circles and how to get out of the mind, tools for getting out of the mind, how to come together in sacred space, and how to bring out the, in this case, this specific case, how to bring out the practice of integral yoga through the chapter, The Ascent to Supermind. So by sacred circle, and I'd like, if I don't have meditation bells, I'd love if someone could time a 4-minute meditation to start off. During the 4-minute meditation, Marco, do you have that? Marco, excellent, thank you. Marco Morelli. So during the 4-minute meditation, I'll read one quote that ties in. The quote is from The Secret of the Veda, and I'll read it 3 times. It really ties into illumined mind, ties in extremely well to intuitive mind, and also ties into overmind and supermind. Sri Aurobindo calls this quote the essential notion of the Veda. It's from chapter 10 of Secret of the Veda, titled The Image of the Ocean and the Rivers. Beautiful chapter. So as far as a sacred circle goes, I'd like to bring in some things that Marco Morelli talked about in our first couple of meetings that may have dissipated a little bit, and I'd like to bring them back to the forefront. And I'd also like to acknowledge our geographic circle. That's why I asked if anyone knew where Katrina was. Because how in implementing a tool that may draw us out of the mind and help us focus on what the text says and how to apply that in practice and how we apply that in practice, how we can look at the explanations that Sri Aurobindo has given and talk about various experiences on these different in these different parts of our being, on the different planes of consciousness. So creating a geographic circle, normally I don't put myself first in anything, but since I'm facilitating, I'll start off. I'd like to talk about a few things leading up to these paragraphs that start with higher mind and then illumined mind, intuitive mind, and overmind. And bring in a few quotes from other works of Sri Aurobindo. So the things that Marco Morelli talked about when the circle first started was having a pregnant, I don't know if you put it this way, but having a pregnant pause between sharings. I'd like to recommend an intention of 4 breaths between sharings so that there's a real intention to get back in touch with our own center and the group center and the center that Sri Aurobindo is bringing in, so that if I'm following Doug, I'm not just reacting to what Douglas has said, but I'm doing my best to quiet everything back down and then proceed from there. So the geographic circle that I visualize from what we have here going clockwise, starting with myself, would be Scotland. I almost said Munich, I'm sorry, Nuremberg or close to Nuremberg, and then circling around to Boulder and then to Kentucky and back to Scotland. So the reason why I'm putting an order on things, and again, this is only a suggestion. We don't have to, I won't be upset if anything isn't stuck to, but the suggestion is there so that so that whoever's not sharing can really quiet their mind and be present for the person that's sharing and know that they're sharing next and have time between sharing to sense in rather than be thinking ahead of, oh, I should say this or I should say that. I kind of look at a lot of that as vital mind wanting to jump in and vital mind wanting to be heard. Maybe, that basic lovely human need of being seen and heard is always on the surface. And I'd like to, in a sacred kind of encapsulated circle, starting with a meditation and finishing with a meditation and staying with the geographic order of sharing, let's just see what happens. Does anyone have any, before we start with the meditation, does anyone have any questions with kind of four basic suggestions going in geographic order from me to Marco Massi to Marco Morelli to Douglas and just staying with that circle the whole time? Oh, the other thing that I wanted to share is after talking a little bit, as we go around the circle, I'd like us to spiral from sharing about higher mind and focusing on the four paragraphs pertaining to higher mind, then transitioning to illumined mind, and I'll facilitate the transitions. So then we're looking at the paragraphs and I'll show you which paragraphs they are. You don't have to have marked them already. So then we'll go to talk about illumined mind and what is an illumined mind experience and an intuitive mind and so on and so forth. So there'll also be that kind of leveling in the circles. And I'd love to do this until 90 minutes is up. Okay, any questions before?
No, that makes sense to me.
Doug, are you still with us?
I was going to say, if my video is not up, then count me out of the spiral, if that makes sense. So if you can see my face, then I'm vocally going to participate.
Okay. Would you like to time a 4-minute meditation, Marco?
Yep.
Thank you. Truth of thought creates truth of vision, and truth of vision forms in us truth of being. And out of truth of being flows naturally truth of emotion, will, and action. truth of thought creates truth of vision, and truth of vision forms in us truth of being, and out of truth of being flows naturally truth of emotion, will, and action. This is indeed the central notion of the Veda. I've made a lot of notes on this chapter, but I haven't thought much about what to share to start things off. I see this chapter incredibly filled with process, and it inspires me to set to practice all that is possible in any given moment. The first note that I have is a reminder from the chapter, The Triple Status of Supermind. What is the triple status of supermind? And I think oversimplified, the first is that it founds unity before individuality was even conceived. From there, unity is, it modifies unity, creating the many from the one, and the one from the many. So there's a kind of a channel there. And the third status of supermind is that it supports the individual evolution. One note that I've been meaning to say that I don't know that I've said in this group is where the word integral comes from. In Sri Aurobindo's writing, it comes from the Sanskrit word purna, which often gets translated as complete. So sometimes you'll see purna advaita, complete non-dualism, linked in with integral yoga. This chapter has a lot of hidden references to the characteristics of supermind, Satyam, Urtam, and Brahat, the true, the right, and the vast, as descriptors of supermind. And I see that there's something that always jumps out at me also. He talks about the pressure of the psychic being coming forward. There's a, this dear friend of mine who's been reading Savitri quietly since the early 60s, she kind of talks about being kneaded like a loaf of dough, like a ball of dough. And there's this this pressure that is like turning as something from below is wanting to break through the density of matter that we are. And also one other note is that Sri Aurobindo almost never talks about, I see the word consciousness force all over these first paragraphs. It's chit shakti. And Sri Aurobindo almost never talks about consciousness being separated from force. It's the very essence of consciousness, which is kind of a reversal of the way in which we think about things coming from a scientific background, seeing consciousness and being raised to think that consciousness is the epiphenomenon of matter rather than the divine elemental substance of the universe. And Sri Aurobindo and the mother talk a lot about reversals of consciousness. Hello. Are you Katerina? You're on. Oh, are you Katerina?
We're testing headphones.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I have to test some. I can't hear you though. So
you cannot hear me. Oh, you can't hear me.
Yeah, I'm at my alma mater. I just got sighted for being all black, so it took a while for me to log on.
On mute. No wonder. You're not on mute.
Okay, I think I can hear you now.
Okay, good. So we've Katerina, right? No.
Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
I can't hear you yet, so I'm working on that, but I'm still here.
Do you have a join? Oh, she wouldn't be able to hear that. Join audio by computer. Is her name Katerina, Marco?
It's Katina.
Katina, thank you. So when Katina comes, when she gets her tech worked out, I'll briefly describe the circle that we created. And she's in Virginia, so it would be Boulder, Kentucky, Virginia, I think. Yeah. Katina,
yeah, I can hear you now.
Cool. So Katina, we've created a geographic circle, and we're actually going to be sharing in turn in the geographic circle with a four or five breath pause between sharing. So how you fit into the circle is it goes me and then Marco Massi, then all the way around to Boulder, Colorado for Marco Morelli, and then Douglas in Kentucky, and then you in Virginia, and then back to me. And we're going to spiral like that.
Mine goes more like a zigzag, but that's okay.
Yeah, yeah. the earth. We are not in a perfect circle. Good. And so with the aspiration of deepening and coming out of the mind, the way that we signaled that we're done sharing is to go on mute and at that point trigger a pause between sharings. So I was trying to briefly go through some of my notes in the columns for the first chapters leading up to Higher Mind. But I think I'd like to stop there and just pass to Marco Masi after a meditation and see where that takes us and see how long it takes to loop back around. And then maybe on the second loop is when we'll start into kind of specifically focusing on not just what Higher Mind is, though that should come into it, but also how do we practice Higher Mind? How do we practice, what does it actually, what are experiences that take place on these different levels? So with that, I'll pass to Marco Masi.
Okay, thank you. So we make a meditation first, 1 minute, or should I intervene immediately?
4 breaths. Yeah, however, yeah, like 4 breaths. It doesn't need to be timed.
I take the initiative then. Okay. Okay, so what I would say for this chapter and what came to my mind almost at the beginning of the chapter by just looking at the title, that Shubindo is still not talking about supermind, but of the ascent towards supermind. And one of the problems I have, and I have noticed many have when reading Sri Aurobindo, because Sri Aurobindo is not an easy reading. And there is, and he, by the way, says, explains this, I think this was in one of the last chapters, why his own reading is not always so so easy, or maybe it wasn't just in this chapter, I don't recall now, where he said it is sometimes not so easy to relate the things he writes to our ideas, to our conceptions, mental conceptions, to our experiences, to our feelings. Sometimes when he writes about supermind, I think for most of us, it's very difficult to relate this. And he says somewhere, maybe someone can help me. It was in this or in the last chapter, I don't recall. And I like this chapter because there is a part to which I can relate relatively easily, and another part to which I cannot relate. Obviously, the supermind, the supermental part is, well, very interesting, gives me a lot of inspiration, but I see this still as something very far away. Whereas, even though a yogi would say never see things too far away, because only by believing that they are so far away, you are repelling it, but it's difficult. In this case, to think of supermind as something just behind the corner, at least for me. Whereas I like this chapter because, as you said, here we have the first steps. And we have the whole ladder, and we can relate at least at the first step of the ladder into this ascent towards supermind. and which he calls the higher mind. And this is something I can somehow relate to. And this is something which I think conditions my life always, all the day, especially when you speak with other people, you immediately feel when the discourse is at the level of a purely analytical or vital or mental level, or at a little bit higher level, and which Sri Aurobindo calls higher mind. I think the intuitive mind he's speaking about is not just that intuition we speak normally about. When we speak about intuition, I think we are speaking of the higher mind, and which is this something in our cognitive process that I believe is imposing itself slowly but steadily in humanity. Because the first aspect of the higher mind is, in fact, and you will have this more and more in this Askent, the sense of unity. Sense of unity of humanity, for example, is something that is imposing its, even though with a lot of struggle and setbacks, so to speak. But it is something that is, I feel with my higher mind, I feel how this higher mind aspect is slowly going to be generalized in the human consciousness globally. And we see this more and more because these topics of human unity, even though they are, may not be expressed with Aurobindonian nomenclature, is imposing itself and finds also a lot of resistance. So higher mind I can relate very well. It's something that makes almost part of my life, even though I don't think I have already a full comprehension of the, not a comprehension, a full, I have not fully realized it. Human mind, intuitive mind, little bit less overmind. I think it's already still far away, and supermind still to be realized completely. But that's what, well, this is my, and I don't practice the higher mind. And it's not something that is practiced. It's, or it is there or it is not. It can be also there in several different gradations. But our practice of yoga leads us to a higher mind state of consciousness. But I don't know if we can say that higher mind is something that can be practiced. It is something that you attain. But at any rate, yes, this is one of the most important aspects of this chapter. The others are maybe in the next reading of the Light Divine in a couple of years, maybe again. So that's what I can say, for at least for the moment.
It's my turn. I just finished reading the chapter this morning, so I can't pretend that I'm deeply absorbed or integrated it. But part of my way of reading, called a strategy, maybe this is a mental strategy, but there seems to be some seed of wisdom in it, because it works for me, it seems to be working, is that I'm trying to assume that I know what he's talking about. I'm trying to assume that it's not a matter of learning something that I don't already know, but of remembering something that I already know. So supermind is here, like supermind should be perfectly obvious. Maybe my mental self doesn't think so, but if supermind is real, then supermind is present, omnipresent, omniscient, and so forth. This motion, this movement of ascent, going from lower to higher, also is something that I feel I have to assume, but that I can't fully identify with, depending on really my state of consciousness. It has been good for me through all this reading now, a few months we've been doing this, and this is my first time reading Aurobindo seriously. It's been good for me to reorient my sense of where these higher structures or higher states or higher experiences come from. I think that I came into the reading with a sense that if something like truth or justice or beauty is to come into the world, it has to be invented by us. It has to be like instituted and expressed, and come into being. What I understand Aurobindo to be saying here, part of what is this move from the mental mind, physical, vital, mental mind, to the higher mind, is that there's a meeting, really, that there is this emergence from multiplicity and from history and from the lower, but there's also a descent. This is the part that is the flip side of this chapter. There's an ascent, but the ascent meets a descent, and the descent is of the divine reality through these gradations, which Aurobindo describes. And I know, later in the chapter, he speaks about how this has a logical structure to it, but it's not, doesn't unfold logically. There's always an interplay of forces. And as the descent meets the ascent, there's an admixture that occurs, so that the initial experience is not of a pure higher mind or a pure illumined mind or a pure supermind. It's of this admixture of the physical, vital, mental, and the ignorance with the primordial truth, light, consciousness, delight, and so forth. If I could identify some kind of just smaller shifts that I feel are maybe engendered by this, and in this arc of the spiral, moving from the mental to the higher mind, I think that there's a sense in which, to where we can welcome these psychic invasions and these psychic intrusions. We might, that's in a way to cast them negatively, but if we see that this is the attempt of the ascending and the descending currents or the or energies to meet, and that it's going to cause disruption, but that it's part of an unfolding or of a but there could be some faith or trust that what's happening is part of a an inner luminousness or an inner truth coming into fruition, coming into coming into a fullness of manifestation, and then what our role in that is, because that's the piece of this that Aurobindo emphasizes, that the individual, the ego self, subsumes, becomes an instrument, becomes a servant, you know, of that process. And so I think part of what, if there's a practice here, which I'm just formulating right now, it's not that I've been doing this consciously in this particular, you know, in these terms all along, although I think part of me in different terms maybe is in this admixture doing it. I think part of the practice is putting oneself in service, is recognizing the higher, recognizing the you know, those qualities of truth, vastness, rightness, beauty, goodness, and serving those, serving their descent and integrating them, I think, with the other aspects of self that are darker, that are more resistant to those kinds of influences. And I think that that's already a lot to do. That's already a very hard and work. But at the same time, it's not that we have to do all the work. And that's what's, I think, encouraging about this shift in view, is that, you know, that struggle and striving can meet with the grace and the guidance and the other gifts or blessings or insights, you know, that come with that that meeting of the ascending and the descending. And I'll pause there.
Mateo mentioned the friend that had been reading since the 60s, who has been needed or is needing this dough constantly. that sounds like half a century into the future. There's still the formation. But to Aurobindo, and perhaps to all of you here, and to others that are not here that I've spoken about this before, but your message is coming through conversations, waves, and fold ripples of needed language, layering with age, curating collections of cosmic connections. Each of these conversations is direct access to our history, our knowledge, I'd like to see how it unfolds here too. I don't have anything else to say.
Tina, would you like to share? You're muted.
Okay, yeah, I didn't know if it was my turn yet. I thought you were next, Mateo, but yeah, I was just, I think that second Martha said about the interplay between there's an ascent and there's a descent, that you know, that sort of like complements each other in a way. That's what struck me with when Arvind was talking about moving from the mental realm, I guess through the over mental areas and then eventually into the supramental. First, with the first Marco said about it involves some kind of unifying level, being able to, your particular personal identity becomes, you sort of expand it into something more universal, which to me, you know, that in itself, I've seen in stages in my own life when I have, I guess I call the process like a spiritual maturing process. But as I've like, I'm still, of course, I'm still in that process. But I've noticed when I've sort of reflected on parts of eight areas in my life when I've matured spiritually, that some of these characteristics that Aurobindo talks about in Ascent, between the different types of mind, you know, I can recognize my own experiences. Like I remember when Marco talked about service, you know. Because I like to take what Aurobindo is saying, and as complicated as it is, I like to really try to apply it to, you know, to action, to some type of action. And yeah, I remember points in my spiritual maturity where I would become a little bit more selfless in the sense of I started to view my individual actions and strivings or what have you. Instead of focusing on how it affected me, my world, and those within my circle, I guess, of life in terms of where I function. I started to think about it, put more thought into it, and consider how does this apply in a universal level? And almost like Kant, like it's almost like Kantian. When I first learned about Kant's categorical imperative, when he talked about, you know, you can think about the rightness of an action based on its, if you could justify it, its universal law in some way. And so, even though I noticed that there were gaps in that argument too, because there's more to it than that, but, you know, I can see that part of that ascent means that the individual has to start considering or perceiving himself as a force that not only has impact in his own life, but on a universal level. I mean, even in areas of the cosmos where you think you don't even have access to, yet your individual actions and what you do locally does have an impact. And when you can think about that impact and consider it when you're deliberating about when you're deliberating about a choice to make or a certain course of action to take, I can see that being part of the ascent. And when the second Marco talked about what I think is beautiful about it is I'm more inspired by the descent, the corresponding descent, I guess, of the effective unifying knowledge and action, of the supramental into the lower mind. And that having the power to transform our actions. And I can see where that was happening, where when in the mental realm, when I was attempting to, or when I was going through this transition where I was starting to sort of universalize my choices and actions and see it and look at them in a more of a unifying way, that in order for that to transform into action, my faith, in terms of my faith, I could also see how it wasn't possible without there being a supramental influence descending and sort of inspiring my mental processes and moving into action. In particular, I remember when I was attending a church and when I was going through a certain stage of spiritual maturity, and we started doing a Bible study on Mark, on the Gospel of Mark, and really got into it. And man, and to me, that's an example of that descent, because as we were studying it, and I started to learn about, and when I started to learn about the types of actions, the servant mentality, okay, the servant nature of Christ, okay, which is what I consider to be my super mental influence. That knowledge and that inspiration, as I was learning about how the super mental, how the super mental embodies service and that concern for the universal in their actions, that inspired me to start changing and transforming my actions. I found myself doing things like volunteering more and getting satisfaction out of just giving and serving, because there was that, it started on in the mental realm, and where I started to, like I said, universalize my choices and look at them in a more unifying way. But then in addition to that, I was also being impacted and influenced by this descent of a super mental power from my, I guess you could say, because there is a part where Aurobindo says that you have to seek it, in a sense. My seeking, when I was going and studying Mark, the Gospel of Mark, I guess that opened an opportunity for the descent of a super mental to come in and exercise this inspiring power to transform my actions. And to me, that's the part that's so beautiful, because and I can see where Aurobindo says it's not sufficient to just remain in that mental realm, because the mental realm is not going to, doesn't have the power to move to any type of action. It takes a descent of the super mental. And that's one of the themes in Aurobindo at the beginning that sort of attracted me to to continue reading and continue studying. So that I like the fact that I don't have to depend on my own resources, whatever, the mental realm, life and body to actually transform to transform where, stages of spiritual maturity into action. Because unless you see it transformed into action, there's really no evidence that it's there. So that's one of the things that I was thinking about and that I sort of focused on from the very beginning. So that's all I'm going to focus on for right now. I just have one thing to say in relation to that, because I'm wondering, overall, it's that one of the, I think what makes the super mental realm, part of what makes it so powerful is for one thing, that power would descend, instead of maintaining, in that realm, it would descend into the lower nature of our ignorance, just basically inspired, by transforming this nature. And I think that's just so beautiful, and that's something that I aspire to in my own stages of ascending, is to to maintain that, you know, at, let's say, you know, you come across the rare human beings in life that have ascended close to that, and can function and operate through the supramental consciousness. You know, to maintain that desire to always be willing to descend, well, you have to continue descending into your lower nature, into the lower nature, in conjunction with the super mental consciousness to repair areas, certain areas of your nature. But just the willingness to do that, and I think that sometimes that's where a lot of people get stuck, because I remember putting that in my notes, is that when I was looking at the portion of Aurobindo when he describes the sort of when you ascend to the certain stages that you start to when he's talking about the four main stages and the higher lumen intuitive overmind, and then when he describes some of the characteristics, he says that, you know, with each ascent, that the substance is finer, stronger, luminous, and more static. And that, yeah, when they descend, it changes and repairs. So, but it's still all the same substance. So, you know, I think that's maybe, is it possible to get, sometimes you can get stuck there, you know, where you get into the, you know, when you're going through those four main stages, and you're experiencing the finer, stronger, more luminous, ecstatic, you know, features of that stage, how do you avoid getting stuck at a particular stage or within a particular domain, you know, just due to the intensity of that strength and that luminosity and that ecstasy? You know, you get comfortable there, I guess, or maybe not. Maybe that's a sign that, you know, maybe that's where the supermental has to descend and work on the lower nature to move you past that. And so, you know, that's something that I think is, that I want to be able to maintain, is desire to, and a readiness and willingness to always be able to descend into the lower, my lower nature for repair and change. And I've had to do that recently. I mean, I'm in recovery. I've been like 2 years in recovery from substance abuse, and I mean, which is a perfect example of that. And like I said, I try to find practical examples of what he's talking about in our just everyday experience. So that was one issue. But just the fact that the supermental has this power to transform the will, I mean, that is, I don't know if anything that, I mean, you know, that is godly. That is, I mean, because one of the things that I know in my Judeo-Christian background that we always talk about is freedom and how, you know, God gave us free will, but he's not going to impose upon our will in any way. You know, it's up to us to surrender it without his imposition. But now I can see how, you know, it's not an imposition. It's it's a descent. It's like but you also have to seek, and you also, and it's something that sort of meets you as you're trying to ascend and, you know, through the stages, the four main stages of mind, you know, that, it's something you have to cooperate with. It's not something that, it's not an imposition, because that's what I was worried about before. Yeah, but it's good to see that. I just think, and that's one of the things that makes the divine so powerful, is that it does, its willingness and its power in finding ways to transform will. Even if it means descending into the lower nature, you know, to achieve that. I think that's beautiful, and I think that that's loving.
Thank you.
since we're talking about practice, I hear a lot of service, which is really beautiful. The karma yoga from the Bhagavad Gita is setting into motion with work, cause and effect. And the main practice of karma yoga is non-attachment to the outcome, right? Faring forward rather than faring well. And that's an aspect of the triple status of supermind. It's the right, the descent of supermind. The first is the founding of unity, which is the true, Satyam. Then in descending order, then it's the right. And as far as a practice goes, karma yoga fits right into that. It's organized action. And that's the same that the supermind is doing and has done in distilling out and becoming the many, the waters, the movement, the chit shakti. There's a sense in us to be of service and organize through work, and the yogic practice and correlate of that is releasing all the fruit of all outcomes. There's another practice that ties into that, samatha, equanimity, accepting the contacts of all things with an equal poise. And there's a beautiful stages of the practice of equanimity that we can talk about another time. But going to the practice, the tri-yoga, Sri Aurobindo talks a lot about in synthesis of yoga. The other is the yoga of love, bhakti yoga. And in the organization of supermind, the third status of supermind is the vast. That is bhakti yoga. You know, it's not the yoga of love isn't the yoga of I love exclusively. It's divine love, loving of all things, loving the contact of all things. There's equanimity practice that Sri Aurobindo details in the Record of Yoga. For those who have encountered Devashish's book, there's practices in there called bogha rasa, the kind of love of the contact of things, whether it's something that is seen as pain or pleasure. And yeah, it's as you were talking, Katina, I was like making all these connections between that triple status and the tri-yoga. And yana yoga often gets kind of misthought about. It's the yoga of knowledge. And a lot of times people think sitting and reading books and being able to enter into mental discourse and knowing a lot of facts about this and that, that's somehow yana yoga. But Sri Aurobindo's very clear. It's a knowledge of the one. It's unity consciousness, yana yoga. And so these three, as far as forms of practice fitting into what we're, and you're right, Marco Masi, you can't practice illumined mind and practice intuitive mind. There's states that we end up entering into with the yogic practice. And Sri Aurobindo defines yogic consciousness as the intangible force producing results both inward and outward. And that's the whole meaning of yogic consciousness. And then there's so many experiences that follow those things. But also he says over and over again, we aren't actually in yoga. We aren't actually in union until there's an alignment of the individual soul with the cosmic soul and the transcendent, right? The transcendent absolute and the cosmic infinite and the individual all kind of in alignment working together. The last thing that I'll share is an aphorism that really inspires me and that reminded me of a few things that various people have said. I love this. It's Sri Aurobindo's aphorism 315. I'm weary of the childish impatience which cries and blasphemes and denies the ideal because the golden mountains cannot be reached in our little day or in a few momentary centuries. The golden mountains cannot be reached in our little day or in a few momentary centuries. And one addition on that line, it's something that Sri Aurobindo develops well in the synthesis of yoga, the three steps of nature. Oftentimes when I'm listening to people talk about cosmology and our conception of what the world is, our conception of what the cosmos is and the meaning of life and existence, it often, the third step is forgotten about. And it's what we're working on here. It's like the essence of what we're working on here. And the three steps of nature are simply what has evolved, what's in the process of evolving, and what we're evolving into. And there's where a lot of the practice, faith is a yogic practice. It's not a mental belief structure that's forming a world based on structures. Faith is, in Sanskrit, it's shraddha. It's like a flash knowing, and you kind of know what is to be and what is to come, and then that is practiced. So it's like bringing in intuitive lightning flashes and saying, this is what it is, and I know that's what it is, and it doesn't need to be explained, just practice. There's a lot of faith linked in with that.
A few words about the notion of service that we mentioned here throughout. As I understand it, at least in the perspective of an integral yoga, which is a sort of generalization, which comprehends also karma yoga. And one thing that I saw Sri Aurobindo making a lot of emphasis, not so much in this chapter, but I think you will find this more in the synthesis of yoga, is, yes, there is this idea of the service as a practice of yoga, as a karma yoga, but he also emphasizes that it is not a service for humans, not a service to humanity. And this is a difficult part. It is a service exclusively for the divine. And this is something with which I have lots of difficulties, because it is easy. No, it's not easy, but but it's at least for me easier to service to the have this idea as a service for others, to others, to other persons, to a community, to a nation, if you wish. But to keep always one's mind and then one's consciousness fixed in the idea of a service for the divine, that's what Sri Aurobindo is asking us for, and this is much more difficult, I think. The way he was also mother, so mother, she, mother was even more extreme, I found, when she talked about philanthropy. And they were quite dismissive of any sort of philanthropy, which is maybe bad news for many of us who may be also active, as I'm also still active in some NGO, you know, and Greenpeace, Amnesty International, whatever. And but they tell us that's not the real integral yoga, which doesn't mean that these things can help us. They can help us to ascend. So the real service is the service to the divine, and that's what's the little aspect that I wanted to underline, at least how I understand Sri Aurobindo. Then what I liked very much, Matteo, was when you said faith is a yogic practice. Yes, this is also a very good point, I think, because we come from, more or less every one of us comes from a religious background, I suppose. And there's this idea of faith that you must still simply believe with your mind and accept it as it is. Then nowadays we are living in a, this is a second phase of evolution. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that Sri Aurobindo is saying this, but as I see it with my higher mind, so to speak, I see now we are in a phase where humanity sees faith as something obscure and religious of the past, and everything must be scientific and empiric, empirically tested. This has, of course, a lot of advantages, and I think in this sense, it brought us further, a step further. I think the next step will be where we go back a bit to this idea of faith, but will have a different understanding of faith as an inner perception of a truth, which, however, cannot be expressed by mental ideas or mental structure or an intellectual ideas. But we know that it is true inwardly, and we have faith that, for example, I have faith that indeed Sri Aurobindo is speaking about something that is true. But I have no material, empiric proof that in 300 years there will be the supramental species. But I have faith because it's not just, that does not come just from mind, but from something in me that says, yes, this is a very profound truth. And this, in this sense, faith is a yogic practice, and because it is something that does not need mind, does not need religion, does not need dogmas, and yet does not have an outer material proof. That's something that we are practicing now a lot, I think, in our human evolutionary stage. We have faith and still the experience is not completely there, is still lacking. And that's okay. I think that's enough for now.
I'm not going to take too long. I just wanted to presence one of the points that Aurobindo makes toward the end of this chapter, which has to do with integration and the process by which descending and ascending come to some equilibrium, perhaps, some stabilization of a unified being. I don't have a lot to say about it because I think we're really it's in the thick of it. We're in the midst of it. It's not yet accomplished in historical terms. But we started this book, the very beginning of this book, Matteo chanted the opening verses of it in our first talk, with this vision of an eternal succession of dawns, dawn after dawn after dawn after dawn. So between the dawns, there are nights, one would assume. This is the whole process of cosmic manifestation, and development, evolution out of the Nessian, what Aurobindo calls the Nessians, the ignorance. But if this is an endless succession of dawns, and maybe this is just me speaking mentally, but again, on the premise that at some deep level we know this, then this has all happened already. This has all been accomplished. I like the interplay and the resonances between the different traditions, between the Vedic, Hindu, and Christian, and sometimes the Buddhist, sometimes Taoist. Other elements have come in. I'm remembering, I don't know the Bible that well, but I'm remembering, and I couldn't tell you what gospel this came from. I'm sure Katina could, but something that Christ said, it is accomplished. And so perhaps we have a mental idea of integration, which has to do with putting parts together into some kind of holes. But I think that there's another sense of integration that overcomes the sense of opposition, the sense of duality between the higher and the lower, the ascending and the descending, the light and the darkness. And Marco has commented on how Aurobindo does not say too much about the supermind. I guess that's coming in these last couple of chapters. I don't know. But he starts to give us a sense of that at the end of the chapter. And I started this quote, this passage, so I'll share it and then I'll leave the rest of time to that, to those who are next. There is an occult truth behind its negations. This is he's speaking about inconscient nature, which only the supermind, with its reconciliation of contraries in the original reality, can take up and so discover the pragmatic solution of the enigma. Only the supramental force can entirely overcome this difficulty of the fundamental nescience. For with it enters an opposite and luminous imperative necessity, which underlies all things and is the original and final self-determining truth force of the self-existent infinite. This greater luminous spiritual necessity and its sovereign imperative alone can displace or entirely penetrate, transform into itself, and so replace the blind ananke, that's a Hindu word, of the inconscience. So I'm going to rest in that for a while, at least.
Many of us have noted that the service in culture or service to the divine recently I imagine perceived that the whole process of Aurobindo's just infusion of his vision. I've been, as we've noted, we're all applying this to apply it. The most fundamental way I can perceive is in my everyday action, in my daily cycle. It's a reflection of Aurobindo's vision. That's kind of the base level understanding of it for me. Then can tap into these higher realms, the higher states of consciousness. And a lot of the focus on dream work or dream cycles has been utilizing this path that we go into each rest period, into this state that we're not aware of. We can use that as a metaphor for our waking life. We can use that as a metaphor of our mind into in relation to supermind. We've noted we know an infinitely amount of smallness that is what could be of the supermind. And so this daily cycle of sleep, wake, and all the points in between, which might be more of a meditative state or thought state, they're all creating some sort of orientational map, a guide of this territory. And it can start with this map can start with the physical, just ensuring that you got enough rest the previous night, ensuring that I have enough to drink. So I take this map wherever I go now and do some check-ins, some physical check-ins. Okay. Now let's go to the mental check-ins. And then once I'm able to access the subliminal in order to gain insight, minor glimpses into these higher modes that Aurobindo gets into, then the access is quicker once we learn these methods. And the cycles, no matter how slow they are, can become mechanical in such a way that it's forgotten. And Mateo mentioned a while back about the, or we discussed forgetting in general, in that state of knowing in tandem with not having to know. For me, that's what I'd like to explore. Thank you.
I just wanted to, I was really struck by something that Matthew Massey, said, oh man, it struck me. Okay, so I can still identify with this. He said, we're talking about service, right? I'm so glad you made that distinction. Because I agree with Aurobindo totally that there is a difference between the philanthropic type of service that we do, that we give to the community and human beings, and you've got all the movements out there and stuff, and as opposed to being motivated by service to the divine. Yeah, that's the type of service I was talking about, because it's very easy, service, of course, service to humanity, and that's wonderful, it's great, but there's so many different motives behind that, and people can sort of get caught up, and there's so many ways that the lower nature can sort of hijack that action, and turn it into something that ultimately doesn't really bring any glory to God, to the divine. And so when I was learning about service, okay, I had to go through sort of these stages of understanding the difference between true service and, service, or service that really matters in the sense that, what am I motivated by? And there's a saying that, like, authentic Christians have this understanding about service that they exercise, where when they do service, that they're motivated, the service is motivated by a desire to glorify the divine. And sometimes they'll even, like, with discernment, they'll even forfeit certain types of service, which may on the surface seem like, oh, this would be a great cause, or this would be a great activity to get involved with. But, if in discernment it's revealed to them in their relationship with the supramental, that this service may in some way ultimately not bring any glory to the divine, then you may not want to pursue it. And you know, and Christ makes this distinction a lot throughout the Gospels. And Douglas talked about this, you know, like the mechanical, because, you know, service can also be an action that, like, that's sort of conditioned. Marco, Maisie, I think that's what I was, when you talked about, you know, the different types, that's what I got from, and that's one of the things I did learn, that, you know, if your service is action that's just sort of conditioned by, you know, like force and patterns or habit or what's expected of you, or pleasing acceptance, you know, getting acceptance from society, or just whatever our own little hidden motives are in the world, you know, then there's really nothing, but yet there's nothing that actually brings glory that signifies your relationship to the supramental, then it's really not that worthwhile. When I say relationship, I mean, you know, this serve, and this is where so many areas I told you beautiful about all of them. And he says, this service to the divine, right? That the type of service I mean is you're used as an, you become like a human instrument. He says, instrument of like the higher powers of consciousness, he calls it. But, and I think he said, he said that it's when you become an instrument of the higher instead of like a lower power that your will is operating authentically in that service, because it's operating in a freer state rather than not from like Douglas was saying some like mechanical, like sort of determinism by action, just your everyday life habits or whatever. And he goes further to say that that like the individual, that if your service is motivated by service to the divine, your service is motivated by, you know, by your desire to be a human instrument, that, you know, it can transfer this action from one that's sort of like, from one that's kind of circumscribed by what, by other motives, to one that's sort of expanded. Because your service is motivated by your identification with higher powers, with the higher powers, right? And your awareness that in the midst of the service that you are an individual that's sort of being used as, he calls it like a nexus of action to express this higher consciousness. When you were saying, you know, that you were talking about having difficulty with that idea of service, you know, motivated by the divine rather than just merely, you know, service to the community, that our service has a vertical it's vertically motivated before or in addition to its horizontal motivation. You know, it converts like the entire meaning of individual life and action, you know, away from the human personality that binds us to the lower nature. And instead, you know, it's like you become like this conscious instrument of this higher nature that's evolving. And, you know, and I find that happening when it's different, you know, and you derive this energy and this intensity of like love and authenticity in your service when you know that you're being used as an instrument, okay, for a higher consciousness to express itself through the service that you're being used to implement. And that your only motive is to, like I said, in Christian terms, is to bring glory to that divine. That's, you know, so in a sense, you're sort of in the midst of it because that satisfies you. And there's one quote that I set aside that he says, in place of the nature of individual as its closed field of an unconscious or half-conscious instrument, there'd be a supernature of a divine gnosis, and the individual soul would be its conscious, open and free field and instrument, a participant in its action, aware of its purpose and process, aware too of its own greater self, the universal, the transcendent reality, and of its own person, one as its own purpose. And he says, as illitably, I don't understand, one, and that, and yet an individual being of its being, an instrument and a spiritual center. That, he hits the nail right on the head for that for me, because to me, that is the type of service that I was talking about. Yeah, there's a lot of satisfaction you get of the sort of philanthropic, horizontal service, you know, in your interactions with your brothers and sisters and humankind. But, man, for you to be aware and willing and delighted in, you know, your service being that, of you being, like, used as an instrument for divine expression, for supernature's expression, that is, that takes us, to me, that's real service. That's what I mean. And to me, that's easier to grasp than the horizontal type of service, you know, because you do get mixed up in all kinds of motives and everything. And you know, when your motive is just unified, and it's just, your motive is just, you know, to maintain unity and to be your identification with supernature, then I think that is true service. So that's me good. Thank you for making that distinction, because that's exactly what I was talking about. And in part of my faith philosophy, the whole idea, the whole point for authentic Christians, the whole point is, you know, is that when God made, you know, sent us, and He wanted bodies. He wanted, you know, in the sense human, you know, man was made, humans were made so that God could have access to bodies to express His nature, His will. But I think what I'm finding the difficulty with that is schism is, you know, having access to bodies where He can implant His will and His nature to do. The thing is, you know, in conjunction with the free will, with your own free will, yeah, that's where this difficulty comes in place. So it's a way to, so that's where Aurobindo says that in order for that to work, you know, you have to surrender your will and willingly become an instrument, so that you are participating. You know, you're not just being used, you know, as some sort of like automaton implementing God's will. No, you're aware of it. You're involved in it. You are participating in it, and you're totally aware of the duality and what you are, and what you surrendered for something, so that you can be available for a greater expression of the divine will. So, you know, I think that. I'm glad you made that difference. Thank you.
I'm really sensitive about time, and a meeting that Marco Morelli has in 15 minutes, hoping that we can just stay for 4 more minutes and to have just a speed round, maybe 30 seconds a person. Is that and then a 2-minute meditation. Is that okay, Marco Morelli and everyone?
Sure. Let's do it.
Okay, good. So my final share is Katina, thank you. It's thank you for showing up, and nice to meet you and everyone. This was Marco Massi and I being like, wow, I can't make this anymore. It's too much to wake up at 2 a.m. Let's just meet together. And I appreciate the diversity of voices and discussion around this. A couple more things. The maybe some of you have heard of the Mother's Agenda, 13 volumes of recorded yogic conversations. The actual title of the agenda is not the agenda. That's what everyone calls it. The actual title is the agenda of the supramental action upon earth. No one calls it that, but that's the actual title of those volumes. And it is that. And another thing is that Mother said of Sri Aurobindo in a number of ways that he didn't leave us a teaching. He didn't leave us a philosophy. What he was a formidable action direct from the Supreme. So there's all this like action built into it. And the last quote that I'd like to share is in the second to the, it's in the last paragraph pertaining to us. The individual must be the instrument. And the first field of the transformation, but an isolated individual transformation is not enough and may not be wholly feasible.
So yes, some few concluding words, 40 seconds maybe not enough to say all what I will try to be as fast as possible. A quick answer to Katina, well, it's not an answer, it's to Katina, it's I completely agree with what you have said, it's completely okay. Something in case that there has been a misunderstanding, I didn't want to belittle any in any form of philanthropic work. I am also some in one way or another involved, but I think you have made a quite well summary of what karma yoga and the view of integral yoga is meant to be. And one thing that came to my mind is when we practice this service on the surface, looking from the surface, one doing this service might look very philanthropical because maybe you are helping someone. But from the point of view of karma yoga, Sri Aurobindo describes this as we have to do all the same things eventually, serving others, but not, as you said, in fact, not this action being hijacked by our ego, but seeing in others the divine. So when I serve someone, from the surface, I see you see someone serving a person, and you say, "Yeah, that's not a service to the divine." No, it can be also a service to the divine when you see in this someone, this person, the divine, because we are all an expression of the divine. So there might be from the mental point of view, you might see a contradiction, but there is none. Shortly. The thing with the agenda brought me to make a connection to what also Marco said, that there may be also some misunderstanding that in the last time I said that Sri Aurobindo does not speak a lot about Superman. No, he about the supramental consciousness, he does a lot. You will find it also in the last chapters in Life Divine, and he dwells in it also a lot in the synthesis of yoga. What he keeps a bit in the background always is this action of the supermind in matter. And that's, you don't really, he says this oftenly, that supramental transmutation of the body, but then he remains vague. And it is only when you read the agenda that you understand what's really about. And I think, I suppose that neither he nor Mother didn't speak about that really too much, because it is still something that has to be realized. Also, Sri Aurobindo and Mother did not realize fully this physical supramental transformation. It's still something that has to come. So as every good yogi, they don't speak about experiences unless these experiences are established fully, and they were not. So that's two. Well, it was much more than 40 seconds. Sorry for that.
I don't know what to add. But we have time tonight to continue the conversation. So I hope you'll be deeply and restfully asleep while we're talking. And I look forward to continuing the same time next week with the next chapter.
Taking note too that even conversation two I will not cover even maybe the first page of what we could cover here. I'm starting to understand the need or the desire to just slow it down and focus on even maybe one chapter for 2-3 months at a time. It makes more sense. Especially with these last few chapters. Looking forward to tonight and still not fully grasping the material. But thanks for putting this on, Mateo, Marco.
I also want to thank you all for putting this together. I will be there later on this evening too. And I agree with Douglas that this that you can take like months on just one chapter, even that. And I wish we had more time to discuss it. But I'm looking forward to delving in more, in particular about the resistance when he talks about ways that like limitations, resistance to people, supermind, and also speaking the transformation of consciousness to super mental action, especially if you're impatient like me. No, because I thought he had some interesting things to say about that as well, and about the way that that we resist the process. I'm looking forward to talking about that. But thank you. I see the divine in all of you, and I think this is great and appreciate it. That's all I have to say.
Marco Morelli, could you time a 2-minute meditation? Thank you, everyone. Lovely.
Thank you.
I would like to thank you, everyone, also willing to show up at this European time. That it was greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Okay. Enjoy tonight.
Good night.
Bye-bye. Bye.